You're listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO FM and KRXO HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, reaching over 1 million Oklahomans every week. Now, the Outdoor Hour, giving you the inside scoop on the great outdoors on 107.7 The Franchise.
As long as I can remember, I've been drawn to the outdoors. There's something primal in each of us that awakens when we step outside the bounds of modern society and back into the vast possibilities of the natural world. The more civilized our lives become, the louder our hearts cry for reconnection with our native ways. Failure is imminent, dangers drawing nigh, but approached with reverence and tact, the outdoors return wisdom and gain. In both the outdoors and in life, harvests are fleeting, but lessons and memories abound. With that in mind, we step forth boldly together in pursuit of ourselves outdoors. We are nothing more than tree stand troubadours. Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour. Look at us.
Look at us. Look at us.
We on camera.
We be on camera. I feel bad for everyone else.
I feel bad for us right now because I don't know what to do with my hands. You know?
I wonder, I guess there are lots of pictures on social, but, you know, it's like, you hear a voice, like on Audible, you know, like I never want to see what some of my favorite narrators on Audible look like because I have this vision of what they look like in my mind. I don't want to know.
I remember growing up as a radio listener. The first time I saw, I can't remember if it was a billboard or a website or something, but there was a radio show in Denver that I used to listen to religiously. And I saw pictures of the dudes that I was listening to and I went, oh,
you really?
That's not at all how I pictured. And that's the beauty of radio, is it's theater of the mind, and you get to paint whatever picture you want. But yeah, this is a little different for us this week.
It is. It is. I'll also mention that for whatever reason, the camera seems to thoroughly enjoy switching to goldfish. So everyone, that's goldfish. I'm not really sure why it keeps happening.
The camera loves me. I mean, let's be honest.
We got some kinks to work out here, but we'll do it.
We're
that's all
right. About kinks here on the Outdoor Hour, right?
There we go. This is the Outdoor Hour. I am Taylor Maples. I just shot a bear. But I did. I do like that a lot, though.
You do.
You're
a big fan.
That is Joshua Wildman Stratton.
Wildman Stratton.
And the mastermind on the ones and twos behind the glass, the one and only Matty Goldfish.
Always baked and extra cheesy.
I love the goldfish.
Being on camera now, everybody's going to get to see how much work it takes for goldfish to hit these.
I think that's why it keeps cutting to him, because he also can't sit still to save his life. So
I cannot.
That doesn't help.
I like caffeine, and I have ADHD. What do you want me to do?
Well, typically, I'm leaned back, holding my microphone with my feet up on the desk. So here we are. It's just a whole new world for all of us.
Not for me. I show up this professional every time. So
right. Well,
I always know he's here because I can hear the clicky-clacky of his boots coming down the hallway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's real.
It's very true. How are you, man?
I'm great.
Good trip?
Venice, Louisiana. It's always a good trip. You can't ever go wrong there. You know, this one was unique because it was just friends. And so, you know, that was super... it was super fun. A wide variety of skill sets. But man, I got to tell you, our friend Sam Parks, who's a Duncan born and raised guy, mandolin player in a wonderful bluegrass band called the Fretliners. He came out and he does a lot of carp fishing. And man, that translated super well for him to casting at reds. Because it's just used to making these, you know, delicate, longer targeting fish, long casts. And we didn't have a lot of long casts, but maybe picked it up super fast and was able to get into some good fish. And
when you say carp, on the fly, typically?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that was cool to see. That was really his first kind of redfish trip. And, you know, they made the trek one day. I got a bone to pick with my buddy Will a little bit. They went total secret ops mission, you know. The guides had a conversation about what we were going to do, like where everyone was going to go that day. And he got out into the boat and he looked at Dan and Sam and goes, you know where we're going, right? And they made the run to the land of giants, if you will. And it was happening.
How did this year's trip compare to past in terms of number of fish you guys landed, size of fish you guys landed?
Numbers of fish tremendously higher. We probably boated somewhere between 70 and 80 on the fly over 3 days.
How many bulls?
Probably.
You only post the pictures of these massive, like 36, 40, 44. Was that the high water mark? What did you guys?
Yeah, 43 and a quarter.
Okay.
Was the largest from this trip. My boat was just really intentionally targeting giants, and so I think we only, I would say we probably caught 10 fish that weren't red, that weren't bulls, and that was because we went into some sight casting areas intentionally, just where on average you're going to catch smaller fish, but you are going to come across that 40-plus inch fish just like by himself somewhere.
And these are, the beach. At least when they're in that part of the country, they're pretty schooled up, right? Like, I remember seeing acres, it looked like, of reds kind of climbing on top of each other from past years that you've been there.
Yeah, that's when they're working and eating in a specific way, and that really kind of only happens in some specific areas out there.
Gotcha.
The rest of the time, you're really targeting more singular fish where you're cruising ponds or cruising the shoreline, looking for them running the beach, and you're seeing them, you know.
It's more technical though, because you're actually sight fishing them, and
So you know, I missed a fish that I spotted it, told the guide, oh, there, because he was looking in another area. He was like, oh yeah, great. And I got antsy and just absolutely, I mean, one of the worst casts I've ever made in my life. It was absolute garbage.
In what way? Too short, too long? Did you lay it across the fish's back? Like, what made this a bad shot?
Everything.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where was the fish? What was it doing? And where did your shot go?
Because
I've got some horror stories from my red fishing trip to get into.
But,
so the more you can build my confidence by talking about your bad shots,
the
better.
So the fish was moving. If the front of the boat is 12 o'clock, it was at 11 o'clock. Moving to the left, and it was as fat and happy of a fish as you could want. It was floating up top. It was chilling, feeling no pressure, happy, fat, red.
Didn't know you were there.
Did not know we were there.
Yep.
And how we were in this is by no. Let me clarify. This is all my fault, but I'm just describing the situation. So on the bow of the boat, our guide, a dear friend of mine, Michael Furnett, national champion in the Elite Series Redfish Cup this year, and also won the Bassmaster this year for Redfish. They won. Another team, they said won, but they cheated, and Bass did the right thing. And a complaint was immediately filed by Red and his teammate saying, hey, these guys cheated. Bass investigated it and actually overturned it and gave them. And so he's had an incredible this year, won Fisherman of the Year in the Elite ESPN Redfish, ESPN, but the Elite Redfish Cup and or Fishing Series, whatever that thing's called, and won the national championship and then went on to Bass and won it. And so just an unbelievable year for him, not only as a guide, but as a professional tournament angler. And so the guy's an absolute stud, right? Clearly. Well, he's standing right next to me, like to my left, and the fish is moving to my left. And we were not even 2 feet away from each other. And he took a step to the left and kind of got it, like, kind of got where I was going to cast. And instead of just pausing and being like, hey, bro, like, scooch, or use any words, I just bomb one, knowing I should not release this cast. And my follow-through was wonky, and I kind of, like, adjusted my body because of his positioning, and I ended up kind of going over the top in my cast. And I just bomb a monster, and I throw this thing 7 feet past it and probably 4 feet to the left of it. I mean, just as worst as you can. I strip, 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 try to get it in. When I was stripping in, trying to get in, I spooked it. He turned, starts heading the other direction, pick one up, lay a, what was a good cast. I mean, I put it in front of his nose, stripped across, but I had pissed him off to the point that he was motoring, clearly wasn't going to eat. And it was, it looked like a good fish. And I was pretty pissed. And we get not even 20 yards down the shoreline there, and there was another one. And before we could get to him, he spooked, and I had like a split second, and I just lobbed one out. I'll throw the video up at the eat. Like, he ate super close to the boat. Not as close as the other video, but he ate close to the boat. But what was, he was spooked, and it was interesting because he was full motor. I mean, he was moving, pushing wake, and I lobbed a shrimp pattern in front of his face, and it's like he went in reverse. I mean, it was one of the coolest eats I've seen of a red, because he was intent on, I'm out of here, I'm scared, and then, oh no, I'm not, and just gobbled this thing.
Was it kind of just a reaction?
It was eat? Pure predatory reaction eat, which is awesome. That's what I want. Like, yeah, that means your fly's right, that means the depth at which it's sinking is right, that you're stripping it correctly. Everything was like, this is as natural as it could be because you just triggered its brain, right?
I got one of those last week in Florida on a snook. And it was a bad cast. I dropped it right on top of his head. But I stripped immediately, and I think I just triggered that predatorial response of, he knew we were there. It wasn't a cast he was going to eat normally. But as soon as I moved it, just the response of everything happening at once, he gobbled it up. So
what was – so – we catch this fish, and the whole time, Red and I are like, well, it's a fish. Like, yeah. It looked so small in comparison to the fish I had just missed.
Mm-hmm.
And then Red's like, dude, why is this taking so long? Like, he's like, dude, I told you not to use that 7-weight, you know, like. Like, just get the fish in. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I actually think this is a good fish. Like, and then we saw its tail, and we were like, oh, yeah, no, I think this is a good fish. And so that fish ended up measuring 43 and a quarter. So to tell you how big the fish is that I missed, the 43 and a quarter, which is a great fish, we thought was garbage. Like, almost didn't cast at it. He literally said, as it spooked, as we were coming up on it, whatever, man, just try. At least it's a fish. You know, that's where our mindset was at. So, you know, I think realistically the fish that I totally botched and ruined for myself, it was probably 55, 50. Like, it was definitely north of 50, maybe 55. And that would have been, that would have matched my best fish out of Venice.
That was my next question, is where is the ceiling?
I don't know if anyone really knows anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
What has been your experience, though? What
my biggest is 55, but that was in 2007. I haven't caught something above 45 since then. And in the last 3 years, this 43 and a quarter is the biggest fish that I've caught.
Gotcha.
But that was, you know, my buddy Jay and I were on the boat together all week pretty much, and that was our intent. Like, we were solely headhunting.
That's awesome.
And, you know, other people did other stuff. Our buddy Nate was basically fished by himself for 2 days. And, you know, he had a 25-fish day one day. Just him.
All reds?
All reds.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I got to fish by myself for 2 days, and I've never done that in saltwater before. It was a pretty cool experience. Have a really great guide that I've teamed up with down there on the east coast of Florida. I'll tell you some stories, man. I missed a bunch of shots. I landed a couple. I stuck some good ones. You sound like you've got one story of the bad shot that you took. I've probably got one story of the good shot that I made. but we stuck some fish, and I got some stories, and I'll tell you about that when we get back on the other side. Hey, shout out to the guys over at JD Adams & Company. Every time I'm going on a fishing trip, whether it's here in Oklahoma, across to Arkansas like I love to do, or I'm chasing reds and tarpon and snook in the salt water, those guys have the know-how, and they have the equipment, soft goods, hard goods, all of that to get me out there and feel comfortable and confident and just make the most of the opportunities that I have, because they are few and far between, and we spend a lot of time, energy, money, resources making these things happen. I can always count on JD Adams & Company to help me be equipped and prepared for whatever my adventure is. Go check out JD Adams & Company. They are on the northwest corner of 122nd and North May Avenue here in Oklahoma City. Mention the Outdoor Hour, and they will save you a little bit of money when you're in there as well. That is JD Adams & Company. This is the Outdoor Hour. We'll be back with more on 107.7 The Franchise after this.
You're listening to The Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor Hour. We don't get to do fishing episodes like exclusively very often.
No.
I like it, man.
Yeah. You know what I don't like? When Delta loses your Orvis carry-all with all your fly rods in it and reels when you're flying home from an epic trip.
I don't even want to make you quantify that.
Well, it's best if I don't, you know.
Just, for everybody? Yeah.
People listen to this show that would... You know, they don't need to know. They don't need to know.
Hi, Rachel. but, man, I'm sorry. No leads on it. Delta says it's just gone.
They just keep telling me they can't find it yet. And I'm like, okay.
When'd you get back? You've been back like a week, right?
Yeah. I went from there to Florida.
Yep.
I was in Florida when you were in Florida. And then... You know, came back, I think, that, like, Saturday after Thanksgiving or something like that. So
it's a bummer, man. Hopefully they find it, and it's in good shape.
Hopefully.
Is there
if not,
of...
I guess I'm just going to have to buy all new fly rods.
Delta's not responsible or anything, though, right?
Oh,
how does
shucks.
That work?
Oh, shucks. You're so distraught about that.
I will say this. So I took that new – I pretty much only fished the new Helios in a 7-weight the whole time I was there. And, you know, particularly on that 43 1/4, the lift was the issue. I'll share some of the videos and you'll see. I mean, I have this rod fully bent. Like, I mean, like full curl, man. And I could stop him, but I wasn't getting as much lift as I would typically want. But the main thing was, this is the first year in a number of years I haven't fished an 8.5-foot rod, and I fished a 9-foot rod. And I got to tell you, for me, the time lost in the extra 6 inches from being able to deliver the cast I want to deliver, I noticed it 100%. And I think that just completely sold me on every single one of my saltwater rods from now on will be an 8.5-foot.
Interesting. I've never fished an 8.5.
It was a disadvantage for me. There's a noticeable difference in load time between an 8.5 and a 9-foot. Now, maybe not when you step up to the 8 or the 9 or the 10, but...
At the 7-weight? It was noticeable. Mm-hmm. And you've also spent a lot more time with fly rods in your hand in those environments. Someone like me maybe wouldn't even notice it. as much, especially, but it was noticeable for you.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, if these don't show up, just going to replace them all with new H4s, but only the 8.5 foots, which they do in a 7, an 8, a 10, and a 14. So
interesting. So this is the first time I've gotten to fish saltwater by myself. Obviously, yeah. Had a guide in the boat pulling the skiff around, but I got 2 full uninterrupted days where I wasn't having to trade shots out with anybody. And I learned a ton, and a lot of what I learned is things I didn't know and skills I didn't possess.
Yeah. Like what?
Well, so I went, you know, tarpon fishing in June, and that was my first experience in saltwater, and I realized I thought I could bomb a cast, and I didn't have near enough length to really be potent. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time over the last 6 or 8 months working on just being able to get casts out there and put them where I wanted, left to right. One of the things that I'm out there on this trip, and I realized, okay, now I can bomb a cast a little bit further, but I don't really have any depth control, right? So I can see, and I'm trying not to false cast a million times and measure it. So
right.
That's my new, at least in terms of casting, that's probably the thing I need to work on now, between now and my next tarpon trip, is I want to be a one cast kind of guy. I want to be able to just pick line up, swing it back once, and shoot it.
Has anyone ever come to your house and like talk to you about like trying to make sure you're only like false casting twice?
Yeah, I had somebody in my front yard once, actually, that told me that.
Weird. I was about to be like, is there traveling door-to-door cast sales? Was that a job in the 50s?
I've got one. I know a guy. He'll come to your house, sit in a lawn chair, and tell you all the things you're doing wrong.
It's
Does the
awesome.
Bud Light come with it, or do you have to supply that whenever he gets there?
Not when I'm the guy, but, you know. If you're looking for someone to post up in lawn chair, heckled the absolute heck out of you while you're casting, and just completely pick you apart, I'm your guy.
So here's the deal. I need to, and you did. Well, we were there in my yard. One of the things you said is, man, you got all these trees out here. If I were you, I would pick a tree, and I would cast the left side of that tree, and then the right side of that tree, and just trade out taking shots, and I am much more competent doing that than I was 6 months ago. But so there was one day that we're fishing. The first day we really did redfish, and that's where I hooked those 2 good ones. The second day we tried to get a little bit more technical, and we were chasing some monster snook that were cruising around some docks. And there'd be like 3 or 4 that are cruising in here from 10 o'clock. And I know where I'm trying to place my shot, and my line typically was good, like left to right, but I'd be 6 feet further than I wanted to be, or 6 feet too close. And so I'm having to quickly strip in and try a new cast. And at that point, fish know I'm there. I've lost the element of surprise, or I'd send it across their backs, and I couldn't strip in fast enough to actually get a shot. So the more technical fishing that we did really exposed my inexperience. I think that I'm right on the verge, technically speaking, of being good enough to actually hook some of those fish. But the difference between being almost there and being there is that is a huge chasm of distance when you're on the bow of a boat and you're trying to hook a fish, right? So that's one thing for me is, and I've got some videos I would love to get some of your notes on. It's one of the things my guide Noah was saying, hey man, just go out and like film yourself, because for the most part you're doing okay, but you got this weird hitch in your giddy up on your haul. And so I sent him some video over the weekend of me working on some things. I'd love your thoughts on it. But that is it. That's one of the things for me to improve upon, is actually being able to control the shot a little bit more, because you get away with more in a trout stream. You know, you throw it up, you let it come down, etc.
You don't have to be good.
I've learned you don't.
you don't have to be terribly unless you're headhunting trout, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, where you have to be good in a trout stream is at line management and mending.
Yeah.
Right?
Agreed.
The cast is not as important. You still got to be able to get it out there. But if you can mend super well and you can get it in the current, It's going to do the job for you.
And if your shots aren't good in a trout stream, throw it further up and give yourself time to manipulate the fly to get it where you want, mend it. You know, you can still buy yourself a shot in a river. You can't do that in a salt flat.
Yeah, you're not necessarily going after one in particular fish, though there are plenty of trout guys who do.
Sure.
And that's a blast when you have the clarity and the elements are right where you can really head hunt in trout waters. That's an absolute blast. But, you know, yeah, maybe you missed a bigger fish on the front of the run, but, like, there's still who knows how many in that run. Something's going to eat it.
Yeah.
You know?
And like you said, unless you're really sight fishing those trout, you don't know that you missed that lead fish.
Right,
because you hook a fish and you're reeling in a fish. And, hey, I caught a fish. That was a great job.
I'm good at fly fishing.
I'm good at this, you know. So that was one thing, controlling my line and being able to get shots like within that 1-foot by 1-foot box of where I want to land that fly on time, on purpose, without having to false cast and measure a whole bunch and all that. That's a part of it. Another thing that I haven't even really shared with you over the last 6 months is the number of nights I lay in bed awake at night realizing I lost tarpon this summer because I didn't know how to let a fish run and take line.
Mm, yeah.
I've never
so you just popped off.
I've never hooked fish big enough that you really had to fight. I typically strip and I typically drag them to the boat. And I've got a guy in a trout boat with a net that as soon as you get it at the boat, they scoop it out. And it's almost just like a race of can I get him to the boat before something weird happens. So when I was in Florida in June, I hooked a good tarpon and jumped it a couple of times. But the first time it swam by the boat, I was like, hey, we're done. The tarpon is here. It made one more run, and I was not prepared, and I just was pinching the line. Mm. I had never made an effort to get him on the reel, and as he started running, I didn't give him any slack out of my hand to let him just go and go next round of the fight, right? I did the same thing on a black drum that same trip. Hooked a good black drum, went down to the bottom, and my rod straightened out because, again, I've never really had to fight heavy fish. And I had the rod tip pointed right at the water, and he started to run. I had the line pinched, and he broke me off. My guy's saying, I mean, that's 20 pounds. Like, what do you mean you got broke off? And I have laid in bed at night for months thinking about, I need to probably keep some bend in the rod, and I need to let them have line. So all of that to say, first thing I do when I get on the boat this trip, same guide, is I say, all right, I've done some film study. I've evaluated my last trip. I think I've got some things I need to do better this trip. Help me understand some of these things. And those are the two things I talked about. Hey, do I need to let him take line? And how do I keep a bend in the rod at all times? And so I really learned on this trip, fighting these big reds, how deep in like the handle of the fly rod you can fight these big fish. I didn't know this before, but I'm always fighting with just the tip of the fly rod because that's how heavy the fish I'm used to catching are. So I learned, you know, I was fighting them a little bit lower, holding the fly rod lower, keeping them a little bit lower in terms of like leaned over on the sidearm a little more, but pulling on fish for the first time. And I know it sounds probably really dumb for someone like you that has done this so many times and for so long, but someone that's never done the saltwater game and somebody that's never caught heavy fish that way, it was revolutionary for me to think about taking in line, getting them on the reel as I can, playing with the drag as I'm fighting a fish, and allowing the rod to really work for me as I'm pulling. Yeah, I mean, I've seen that picture. I've seen those videos. I'd never experienced that, and that was the difference between me hooking these fish last year and landing these fish this year.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty fired up about that, as you can tell.
Yeah, that's awesome. Our guy kept saying, Josh, you're going to break that 7-weight. I'm like, okay.
But that's the point, right?
I want to see how far I can push this thing.
Like, that's the point of the gear. If you've got the right equipment, it's designed to help you do this so that you can pull on these fish and not put yourself in a spot where you're going to break off the fish. I'd rather a fly rod break because I pushed it to its max than let the fish beat me.
Yeah. Agreed.
And I think that those are kind of the two boundaries. If I'm using the equipment right and it explodes in my hand, the fish didn't beat me. The equipment gave out. But if you don't fight it that way, you're pulling at the wrong time, you're not giving him the right line, all of this kind of stuff, and he breaks off, he beats you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I full crawled multiple times just to see. Like, it may turn to chopsticks here in a second. I don't know, but
yeah,
we're going to keep pushing it, keep figuring out how far we can push this rod. Man, I brought some Grundon's gear out on that trip, in particular their new fly fishing wading jacket, and that won some awards this year. And, man, absolutely love that jacket. It's awesome. They've got this super lightweight wool kind of deck boss type shoe now. That's like a little ankle boot. They got them at JD Adams and Company. And I had ordered a pair of those as well. And, man, just, you know, I've rocked the deck bosses. I've worn some of their bibs in the past, but hadn't really explored a whole lot of what Grundon's has to offer. And, man, I was just thoroughly impressed with the gear, and that's probably my go-to now for that type of fishing, for sure.
What kind of lines are you running?
I was running all cold water predator line.
Okay.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine was hanging out with, and this is more tarpon specific, but a friend of mine was hanging out with Andy Mill this week.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about the importance in tarpon fishing of using a clear line.
Yep.
You subscribe to that?
Yeah, I mean, they tested it to prove it. I mean, that's a real thing, and it's why Rio and both SA now make a tarpon line that is clear in the front section. And I think it's 10 feet of clear. From SA, you can also get a full clear line, all 100 feet. I prefer the one that just has the 10-foot section because you know how much line is out.
I do like that when it's got some type of, whether it's a tapered header or something like that, especially fishing out of a skiff where you're going to hold your fly between shots, knowing how much line you've got and being able to measure that way, that's really useful.
Super helpful for me. I can't see very well, so like, and for whatever reason, I continue to not get prescription sunglasses, and so when I'm fishing during the day, like, I don't have my glasses on.
You don't wear contacts when you're fishing?
No. And contacts just annoy me. And so having any assistance where I can, like, see line color difference in the line that tells me how much line is out, that's super helpful for me. You know, and going to the, you know, one of the issues you were mentioning of, like, distance control. You know, I don't know if you and I have ever talked about this, but when you're hauling, you know, that forward haul, like, you can use it again while the fly line is out in the air to really help.
Almost like a double jump, if you will.
Well, you can control the energy and the length of the cast that way, right? So if, you know, the fish moved and it's now closer than when you would release the cast, you can actually strip in that line while it's midair, so what we call an air mend, and you can bring that line in closer to you. And so again, there having some color change in the fly line and knowing, okay, I've got this much leader on and I can see these color differences, can really help you visually make those decisions pretty quickly of like how far that cast is actually going to go.
That's another thing. And since we're on camera here, I can show you this. That's something I'd learned was when I'm throwing, you know, if I can keep a little bit of a loop here in my hand and allow that fly line to slide through there, you've got some control. You can slow it down. You can manipulate and mend it as you're shooting that line out.
Oh, yeah. Your non-casting hand should never fully let go of the line.
Sure. I've always just kind of kept it like in my fingertips and let it slide through. But I've never intentionally looked at that as like a mechanism to manipulate the fly line.
Yeah, it's great.
It's cool. Hey, we got to squeeze in another break. When we come back, we got more stories from chasing bull reds. in Venice, Louisiana with Josh, and on the east coast of Florida with myself a couple of weeks ago. You're listening to the Outdoor Hour on 107.7 The Franchise.
Now, back to the Outdoor Hour with your hosts, Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor Hour, final segment this week. Taylor Maples, Joshua Wildman Stratton, the one and only Matty Goldfish on the ones and twos. So, this is the first time you and I have really gotten to talk, Josh, about the red fishing trip. You sent me that video of you hooking the one, like, 6 feet from the boat.
Yeah, not even. It was literally like 3 feet off the bow.
It's a sweet video. You sent that to me like I think the day or 2 days before I left for my trip. So I was all fired up to get out there. Can I tell you about the two good bulls that I caught?
Yeah.
Okay. So east coast of Florida.
We'll argue if they're bulls or not, by the way. But continue.
Where do you draw the line?
Continue.
No, I don't want to anymore.
If they see red, do they charge you?
All right.
They were not. They were out of the slot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the deal. We don't have time left for this today. What I like about this fishery in Florida is you have the opportunity for a fish like that, but they're not piled on top of each other there. Which I haven't been to Venice, so I can't really talk smack.
He's trying to discredit the greatest redfish fishery in North America right now.
I'm not trying to discredit
that's
it
fine.
By any
that's
means.
Fine. That's called jealousy.
I'm just saying I didn't pull 60 or 70 of these out in a weekend.
Well, you should go to a better fishing spot.
To each their own. I don't even really want to tell you the story anymore.
No, that's on you, man. That's on you. That's on you.
I'm going to.
Please do.
No. Cool experience, right?
Again, great experience.
I'm fairly new to this. Cruising along.
And we're proud of you.
For getting into it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You can tell I'm ate up with it.
I know, as you should be.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Cruising along this really big flat. And there's some docks that come through, so we're kind of going like this and weaving our way through, just pulling around some docks and looking for fish. And it's a weird time of year down there because there's still some juvenile tarpon in the area.
I love that.
They are not very happy with the water temperature.
No. Up to get no good.
Yeah.
No. Graffiti everywhere. Those juvenile tarpon.
Those juvenile tarpon.
Delinquents.
Delinquents. But we found a couple spots that were holding some small tarpon. And it's like, all right, we're going to come back here after the water is a chance to warm up this afternoon. I actually got some shots at tarpon, which is cool.
That's
so
awesome.
I'll tell you that. But we're cruising around. We're looking for tarpon. There's some reds in the area, a lot of black drum, some occasional snook. So just kind of a mixed bag. We also pulled a handful of sea trout out. So really fun day just, you know, manipulating the hardware we're using, the flies, all of that. But at one point, we found a really big school of black drum, and to me, it was big. There were maybe 40 or 50 fish in this school, and pretty good size, and we could tell that there was one red on the outside. And so as this school is kind of spinning around, and Noah is turning the boat to help me get a shot, he said, hey, do you see that red at like 11 o'clock? See if he'll swing around, and we can feed him that fly. So it was kind of a unique thing. I threw the fly kind of into the bait ball, if you will, of the school, but specifically targeting that one fish, pulled the fly into position, and he ate, like, right in front of the boat.
Love that.
It was super rad.
It's so fun.
First time I've ever fed a fish like that. First time I've ever, like, picked a fish. And, you know, it's not super technical because they're still schooled up, but I was trying to feed that fish, and I did.
Yeah.
And that was a really rad experience.
And that's what it's about. Like, the... It doesn't matter how many times I do it, it's still awesome,
mm-hmm.
You know? Like, you still talk about, like, oh, yeah, dude, I saw that fish, you know, I pointed it out, I made the cast that I wanted to make, the first cast, you know, it ate, like, you know, and that's reality of, you know, there are times where you have to force, you have to convince them to eat.
Yeah.
Right? We were waiting for some conditions to get better, and we were running a shoreline, smaller fish, small little groups of like 10 to 12, all slot fish, meaning, you know, keepers, because in Louisiana you can keep slot fish, and which we did do. We kept three or four and cooked them up that night, and that was awesome. But I fed this one fish literally five times in a row. Because like they weren't super happy, like they weren't doing their thing really, and like they would just eat it and then not move, like nothing. And you'd go to strip and it would just spit it out. And I literally fed one fish and we filmed it. I fed him five different times before I could finally get it hooked, like the hook hooked, when I stripped. And but I loved it. I mean, we were giggling our little rears off like little kids.
That's cool, man.
On these smaller slot fish that you could see in crystal clear water. And it was just like, all right, they were being real spooky. You had to work hard to feed them. Your fly had to do the right stuff at the right time. And it was just like, all right, cool. Let's just, while we're doing this, let's just get better at feeding fish. Can we convince them to eat when they're clearly not that interested in eating right now? And that was super fun.
It's almost the experience that I've had in saltwater fly fishing, where you're hunting a specific fish, picking it out, trying to feed that fish, reminds me of the difference between rifle deer hunting and bow deer hunting. It's just so much more technical. There's so many more variables. It's amazing you can ever feed a fish in saltwater with a fly rod. Like, it's just truly unreasonable at times. And I feel like bow hunting for deer is the exact same way, right? Compared to how many more things you have in your favor when you're rifle hunting. I would say that that is more of how I feel in a trout stream by comparison. And maybe that's just my experience level at this point.
Right. Your comfort level.
Yeah, 100%. But so that was the first red. Good fight. You know, really had to learn a lot, but I did. That was maybe 10 a.m. on our day. And Noah, my guide, said, listen, man, that's a big fish for around here. I don't want to ruin the rest of your trip. But I'm also going to be honest with you. I've never had a client hook two of those on the same day. Never done it. And so I'm kind of like, okay, like, well, let's go target some other things. I know we found some tarpon. Like, let's do some things. And so we were actually looking for tarpon. We found a dock area that had a few tarpon under it. And this is cool because I'm like you. I don't see fish very well. And I think it's just time spent on the water for me.
If they're close, I'm good.
Yeah.
If they're 40 yards out or further, mm-hmm. I'm just looking for black or, you know what I'm saying? I'm just looking for a darker shape and how that darker color is moving around. That's all I can do.
And I've got such little time in the water, I don't even know what shapes I'm looking for and colors. Right. Like, I'm just, so we're looking for tarpon, and we knew there were a couple here under this dock. So we're just waiting for a chance to take a shot, and I saw a red swimming along the dock, and I said, hey, there's a red down here, like 9 o'clock. And he said, take a shot. So I do. I lay a good shot out, strip, set it, get him. But he ate the fly maybe like 4 feet from a dock and all the pylons. Yeah. And like,
game on.
We'd already said, hey, if he decides to go through the dock, give him some slack and be ready to jump out of the skiff. Because you're going to go chase him down on foot. Once you get on the other side, then you can start, you know, getting him back on the reel. And anyways, Noah, my guide, was a surgeon with the pole. We were able to, you know, pull right, pull left, pull down his back, you know, help me really understand how you can pull on a fish different to steer the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to little by little steer him away from the dock, get him out moving towards open water. And then Noah was able to position the boat between the fish and the dock, so it wasn't really an issue. But I mean, just so freaking cool of an experience because it's so foreign to me.
Yeah.
I learned how to use a fly rod in a way that I've never had to before and didn't know it was possible. I learned how to interact with a specific fish in a way that I didn't know was possible and I've never had to. Like, I literally paid a deposit for 4 more days with this dude before I left his skiff.
Yeah.
I am ate up with it.
Yeah, man. For me, it's like, oh, this is what a fly rod was actually intended to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. that was my epiphany.
Yeah.
When I got into saltwater in the early 2000s, was like, oh, wait, this is actually what this tool was designed for. And not to, you know, I had the same feeling when I've gone steelhead fishing. I've had the same feeling with really big brown trout or rainbow trout on specific water, you know, mm-hmm. rivers that are, you know, maybe more technical, or, you know, like the Black Canyon of the Gunnison. You know, you get into a good fish during the stonefly hatch there, and you're dealing with a lot of current. Depending on where you are in the river, it can be narrow, it can be fast, and like, you really have to understand how to fight that fish. You have to understand how to use that tool to your benefit. You know, I think about the movie from the Fly Fishing Film Tour along many, many years ago. It was probably 2012, maybe 2000, somewhere between 2011 and 2013. And it was called The Arctic, and it was about Arctic char on the Tree River, which is on the upper side of the Arctic, literally. And these fish live under these pools of, like, class 3 and above whitewater. And so you're literally, you know, these guys who are hooking these monster Arctic char, and they're literally running up the river, like, chasing them down, you know? And you got to have the right tools to do it. You know, and I think that those are elements, those environments, just like saltwater, you really learn the importance of the tool and learn the importance of understanding how to utilize the tool. You know, no different than, you know, trying to hit steel at 1500, 2000, you know, or trying to take down a bull elk at 70 or 80 with a bow. You know, it's all about how well do I know this tool and how good is this tool.
Yeah.
And I love those opportunities we get put into in the outdoors where we have to learn that, and we got to learn it fast because you're now in a situation you had never been in before.
And I love that. Yeah. I'm sure the guides that take me out, I think I do a good job of curating the people that I hang out with, but I also don't have
except
for you.
Yeah.
I don't have a ton of ego when I'm in the outdoors. For starters, like, look at saltwater fly fishing. I went 4 days in the last calendar year. I don't expect to have a lot of success at this point in my journey. I want to be around people that can help me learn and can help teach me and make the experience worthwhile. Not only because, hey, I got a couple of cool pictures to put on Instagram with some big fish, but I now have a list of skills that I need to improve upon before my next trip, and the motivation to get out in my yard with a fly rod on a windy day and practice. And for me, as a guy that's got a day job that doesn't work in the industry full time, that's really all I'm looking for, is a handful of days that I can hang my hat on at the end of my life and say, those were really rad days in the field. Whatever that is. Is it a deer stand? Is it on a saltwater skiff? Is it skis under my feet? And a desire to get through my work day to provide for my family and find 10 minutes of margin just to go cast a fly line and be fired up about that part of my day. That's all I need, man.
Yeah. Speaking of deer stands, an invite would be cool, you know, before it's over.
Let's do it.
So let's figure that out.
Let's do it.
Man, stoked to be back in the studio. Glad we had some adventures.
Yeah, we have some new stuff to talk about in the coming weeks. We got some new tech. We got to figure out what we're going to do with these videos, where they're going to be housed, and how people can find them. For the time being, check us out on Instagram at outdoor_hour. You can find us there, that handle on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. You can find me at T_Maples online. Josh is on Instagram at @against_current. Yeah. Any final words?
I got nothing, man.
Yeah.
Other than I'm excited about the end of the hunting season and got some bird hunting trips that I'm looking forward to.
Okay. We'll talk about those next week. Thanks for joining us this week inside the Outdoor Hour. Taylor Maples, Joshua Wildman Stratton, for Maddie Goldfish behind the glass, it's been a pleasure having you with us. Until next time, go boldly. We'll see you outdoors.